Hello and welcome to the program. This is Dave Jeffrey once again bringing you Optimal Life. It's the program just for us older ones thinking of leaving work and getting into those wonderful years of retirement. It's brought to you on the RPH Network. Today we're looking at savings on smartphones. As we age, communications are most important. Well, this is a little saving on it. How to live to be 100. And last program we looked at the importance of cereal. Today we look at the downside or the traps of some of the cereals. Okay, first up today, it's dial-up savings on smartphones. This is taken from the Sydney Morning Herald on the 8th of November. Technology section by Sophie Smith. A mad dash to snare the latest smartphone device should be done with caution. This is because there are cheaper alternatives that will not leave a big hole in your hip pocket. The release of the new iPhone 12 Pro Max will set consumers back about $1,900 and up to $2,400 outright, depending on which variant of the phone you purchase. But the new analysis by telco comparison website Whistle Out found something different. They reckon 56% of Australians say that buying a $2,000 device would put them into financial difficulty. Well, another group, Whistle Out, their spokesman Kenny McGilvray, says the best way to save on a new device is not to buy the latest and the greatest. He says there are great deals on older devices. This is as soon as a newer device is purchased. Consider the different models available if you're focused on getting a particular brand, he says. Consider the different models available if you're focused on getting a particular brand. Refurbished phones are another option, so it might be worthwhile visiting a quality dealer that sells them. Some sites also allow customers to trade in their old phone. You can be financially rewarded. Or consumers could consider selling their old device if it's owned outright. Now there's a group called Moose Mobile. Their chief executive officer, Dan Lewin, says Apple fans, it's important to consider older models. This is before you immediately rush out and buy the latest iPhone 12. He says instead of buying the new iPhone 12 that will set you back around $2,000, simply get the previous model. Now, if you're looking at a saving of around $400, he said, that's how you do it. But he warns that consumers should make sure whichever device they buy comes with a warranty. Okay, well, here are the tips saving on a mobile device. Do a search online to compare costs. Consider buying a second-hand device. Sell your old device on a second-hand site to buy a newer device. Buy the phone outright. And finally, purchase a replacement battery so the existing plan has a longer lifespan. Okay, well, that article says saving on smartphones. Do not buy the latest and greatest, he says. Now, there's a website called Whistle Out. There's another thing here called Moose Mobiles. Check it out first and look at those others, he said. The one there, buy a replacement battery so your existing plan has a longer lifespan. Good luck with that. Do your research on a mobile phone, but consider they are most important to us older ones. Well, here's a catchy title, How to Live to be 100. The Secrets of Centenarians. There are some common facts, both good and bad. These sort out the centenarians from the rest of us. Research has discovered this. Want to live to be 100? Of course you do. And science has a few suggestions to help you get there. There are positive things that you should be doing, such as eating well, exercising. And the negative things you should be avoiding are smoking, of course, and drinking too much. The top tip for reaching your 100th birthday is maintaining an active social life. Well, at least this is according to the research of the University of Otago in New Zealand. That means you don't mope around at home, but you get out and meet the family and friends. Volunteer. Attend social evenings such as concerts, maybe play golf. Yes, getting out and about is important. Another research team agrees, and doing regular walking is another way to remain active. Living in an area where walking is easy, such as being close to parks and trails. This is an important factor as well. Now that research is according to Washington State University. These are the things that you should be avoiding. The big one is no smoking. There's no surprise. But having a history of divorce and stress can also take years off your life. Then there's alcohol abuse and constant financial difficulties. These can also influence longevity. Now that's according to the University of British Columbia School. Your genes are far less influential than you might think. Having a centenarian parent only increases your chances of reaching a similar age by about 20%. A much bigger factor is your gender. Hey, fellas, doesn't look good for us. It says women are more likely to celebrate their 100th birthday. Researchers have discovered they made up 75% of centenarians. But these are simply observations. After analysing the lives of hundreds of centenarians of all ages, they agree. There is still the X factor that no amount of research can find out. Perhaps wanting to live that long is a good start. Well, there you are. That's interesting at the end there. He says wanting to live to be 100 will help you reach. Other things, well, the no-nos that we knew, no smoking and no alcohol abuse. He says divorce and stress is not good either and financial woes. So good luck. Let's keep positive. This is Optimal Life being brought to you by Dave Jeffrey on the RPH Network. Last edition, we looked at the importance of cereal. Well, today we look at the downside of some of the cereals. This is taken from the Body and Soul section of the Sunday Telegraph, 8th of November. It may claim to be healthy, but this breakfast staple is often just junk food in disguise. Written by Jamie Hooper. What would you say if somebody told you a slice of pizza is technically healthier than your morning bowl of cereal? You could argue that a pizza has more fat. But, and this is a big but, read the nutrition panel on the box of your favourite flakes. The carb and sugar content may leave you lost for words. The author says, I'd be surprised if you could find 5 breakfast products in the supermarket aisles that are actually healthy. While many morning cereals often claim to be high in protein or fibre and low in fat, it's easy to miss what they really contain. This is unless you have time to study the nutrition panel, and most of us do not. You need a science degree to read the labels. This is because there are 50 different names for sugar. I'm just going to repeat that. There are 50 different names for sugar. The big marketing trend of the past 12 months has been, quote, 30% less sugar. But how much sugar is still in it? Well, the heading here is why breakfast matters. And this is more important as we get older. It says, while waking up with sugar high may not sound so bad, your breakfast should set you up for the rest of the day, not send you crashing a few hours later. Breakfast is essential for energy and morning brain power. While eating high sugar cereals can sabotage an adult's weight loss goals, the consequences can be even more detrimental to children. These cereals can negatively affect a child's diet and health. They increase the kilojoules they consume. It makes their preference for unhealthy products more so, and also their perception of healthiness of a product. All right, the next heading, the fight against sugar. The product said a healthy breakfast shake. It also said it has no added sugar. Well, there was more sugar in it than any other ingredients. Everything has a place and every adult has a choice to make. It is wrong when products deliberately mislead us, though. Now, there's been petitions to the government to put how many teaspoons of sugar a product contains. There are petitions to put this on the front of the package. But government authorities do not seem motivated towards this. Packaged foods such as cereals should have no more than 5 grams of sugar per 100 grams. Most have more than double that, and many a lot more. Too much sugar is a source of kilojoules. It adds no vitamins, minerals, or fibre to your daily diet. It is increasingly being linked to weight gain and diabetes. The World Health Organization advises it to make up no more than 10% of your daily kilojoules. That's about 12 teaspoons of sugar a day, 6 for children. We see 10,000 products on the supermarket. Many have more than that. There's no regulation in what you can put in front of packaging, so companies can make crazy claims even when they're not true. It would be difficult to single out breakfast cereals. It's not just their sugar content that makes them hard to regulate. It's their fun factor, their convenience. As well, there's poor nutrition profile as they're often kilojoule dense and low in fibre. They can also be high in added salt and highly processed. And finally, we look at striking the right balance. While the cereal aisles can be a minefield, not all are bad. In fact, some can help you meet your nutritional needs. Think of the contribution it makes in terms of vitamins, minerals, as well as fibre. Then there's whole grains and proteins. Cereals like muesli or bran cereals are low GI. This means they're digested and absorbed more slowly. They fill you up for longer. If your cereal has benefits as well as some sugar, well, that's okay. You do not need to avoid sugar completely for good health, but it is sensible to cut back on foods that are low in nutrition. Well, that article there, very serious. We said that we mentioned last program the importance of cereal and fibre. Well, they're saying most of them, and they do say most, are misleading. Be careful of the sugar content. I thought there was one interesting comment there. He says you can have up to 12 teaspoons of sugar a day, 6 for children, which I thought was quite high. Anyway, the main thing is eat your cereal, but watch the sugar and other contents. We're going to look now at estates and wills, most important things that many of us overlook. It is taken from the October edition of a magazine called Your Retirement Living. A well-prepared and executed estate plan can not only save your estate unnecessary costs in the future, it can also save your loved ones from unnecessary stress after your death. Making sure your assets and distribution of money and possessions will be looked after the way you had hoped for after you've gone is important. Now, there are several headings here. The first heading, preparing your will. A will is one of the most important documents that a person can have, yet many people do not take the time to ensure it's legally valid. Some may even put off writing a will altogether. A properly prepared will ensures the distribution of your estate. Make sure that it occurs easily and speedily as possible. At the same time, it reduces the likelihood of being tied up in lengthy and costly legal dealings. This is when the will is contested in court. If you do not have a legally valid will, your assets will be subject to the laws of intestacy. This means the law decides how your assets are distributed and who your beneficiaries are. If you pass away and do not leave a valid will, your estate will be distributed in accordance with strict rules dedicated by legislation. It operates without any regard to what your personal preferences may have been. It can also add significant cost and delay to the administration of your estate. Okay, the second heading, safe storage for peace of mind. After going to the effort of preparing your legally valid will, it is just as important to make sure that it's stored in a place where it can be found. Your executor must have this when the time comes. There are various nationwide trustee organisations that will ensure the safekeeping of your will. They'll secure it from loss, theft, or damage, often in purpose-built and fireproof vaults. Now the next heading, administering your deceased estate. Your executor, who carries a range of financial, legal, tax, and accounting processes, is responsible for distributing your assets as set out in your will. When choosing your executor, appointing someone you trust and who has both the skills and the time to do the job is vital. Other responsibilities of an executor may include notifying your beneficiaries and valuing your estates, paying any debts that you may owe and recovering money owed to you. They must obtain a grant of probate from the Supreme Court. They must complete a tax return and establish trust funds. They've got to divide the estate and maintain auditable records. Executors requiring some assistance with certain aspects of their role, such as obtaining the grant of probate, can use the Executor Assistance Service. This is provided by the public trustee organisations. A living will. Most people know that you should write a will to make sure your loved ones are provided for when you die. But what happens when you're left unable to make decisions due to yourself, maybe an accident, illness, or other circumstances? By creating an enduring power of attorney and nominating a trusted friend, family member, or organisation, you can put in place an effective plan. This can be a plan to enable someone of your choosing to step in on your behalf. This is when you are unable to make your own decisions. Think of it as, quote, a living will. Now, there are three types of enduring powers of attorney that should be considered. There's medical treatment for medical decisions. There's guardianship to make lifestyle decisions. And there's financial. This takes care of legal and financial matters. And the article finishes with the very good advice. It says the best time to create an enduring power of attorney is while you're healthy and still capable of managing your own affairs. That article, The Importance of Making a Will, is taken from the October edition of the Your Retirement Living magazine. We're going to look now at a very important subject, unfortunately, as we age, dementia support. It's also taken from the Your Retirement Living magazine, October edition. Retirement villages were not originally set up with care needs in mind, so the extent to which they provide support for people living with dementia varies. Now, I feel this article has a very important beginning. It says, operators are not under any obligation to support residents with dementia. Some may even refuse to accept residents with dementia due to inadequate support levels at their village. However, many operators feel that they have the moral responsibility to care for all patients. They have support systems in place to do so. The extent to which villages can support people with dementia depends on a range of factors. Things such as business models, the village's culture, staffing levels, layout and building design, the level of engagement and support from family members or a partner, and the severity of an individual's symptoms. When a village provides the adequate support, there are a number of benefits to residents living with dementia. There's safety and security of the village environment, friendly neighbours, social engagement, and the support of a community. There's social activities provided by the villagers. These may be a help to individuals maintaining social engagement. They can reduce isolation and loneliness, even help to retain a skill and memories much longer. There's attentive staff which may be able to provide monitoring assistance. They can help resolve any issues that arise. When an appropriate village is chosen, the support of the village staff and the community may allow a resident with dementia to age in place for longer. This is longer than they would otherwise be able to living in a general neighbourhood. However, there are a number of challenges to consider when choosing a retirement village. This is when you or a family member has dementia. Families often have high expectations that the village is unable to meet. It is important here to be aware that many villages simply do not provide the kind of comprehensive care that people with dementia may often need. Many villages have access to outside services to support people with dementia. These are things like home care packages. The resident or their family must take into account the severity of their symptoms. They must also look at the safety of the village, the potential for conflict with other residents. This is all taken into account when making a decision. There are several things here. The first one to look for is indications that the staff will stay in frequent contact with the resident and/or the family. Secondly, you need evidence of clear, consistent and trustworthy communication. The third thing to look for, staff who are educated and aware of the symptoms of dementia. Number four, you need a supportive culture among the entire village community. Number five, you need management who are able to have open, frank and sensitive discussions about the support services and for the care needs. Other factors that you look for include a high environmental design for dementia, such as clear signs, safe and clear pathways through gardens and common areas, motion sensor lights in dim areas, emergency call buttons in convenient locations, a clear pathway for a transition to a residential aged care facility should it be required. Now, here are some indications that the village may not be suitable. We don't want to be negative here, but we thought we'd read these out. There are few organised social activities and community engagement programs. Another thing to be aware of, staff that are untrained about dementia and the culture of the village. You must also look for the fact that the village may not be secure with confusing layout, not enough signs, making it potentially unsafe. Maybe the village has limited staff who do not see residents very often. Therefore, they're unlikely to notice issues that they should when they arise. When choosing a village, be clear about your needs now and in the future. Be prepared to discuss them with the village manager. Don't be afraid to ask about the services available. Request that these things be provided in writing where possible. All right, now here are the key questions to ask when considering a retirement village. Will moving into the unfamiliar environment of a retirement village be more suitable for you than your current home? What commitments have the village and its management made to supporting people with dementia? Is the village environment designed with people with dementia in mind? Can the environment be modified according to your needs? How long will the village meet your support needs? Can you access home care packages for further assistance? And will they help you transition into a residential aged care should you need it in future? And most importantly, probably, what are the exit fees? Whole lot of considerations there when going into a dementia care. Does the place have the proper facilities? Good thing to look at. As we age, unfortunately, it's becoming more and more important. You're with Optimal Life. Now we've got something just for us old fellas. Hey guys, eating tomatoes reduces your prostate cancer risk. Prostate cancer is now the most prevalent cancer other than skin lesions, certainly in the West anyway. But listen to this, fellas. Men can reduce their risk of prostate cancer by eating tomatoes. Eating canned or cooked tomatoes 4 times a week with a daily serving of 71 grams or 1/3 of a cup can have a dramatic effect. Processed or cooked tomato products seem to have the most protective effect. They're not sure why, but they say it may be due to their levels of lycopene, which is a type of carotenoid. Researchers from the Loma Linda University tracked more than 27,000 Adventist men. They monitored the amount of tomatoes that they ate, along with their incidence of cancer. It said the protective effect seems especially strong in black men. Hey fellas, what great news! Tomatoes can reduce the risk of prostate cancer. And at the start of that article, he said prostate cancer is the most common one in the Western world, apart from skin lesions. Okay, let's look what you got to do. Eat canned or cooked tomatoes 4 times a week. Make sure you have a daily serving of 71 grams or 1/3 of a cup. This can have a dramatic effect. Okay, boys, we've got to get onto this straight away. Well, that's about all we have time for in Optimal Life today. I hope that you've enjoyed the program. And don't forget, as always, we would welcome any comments you may have on this program. Give me a call, Dave Jeffrey, on Sydney, 9518-8811. Thank you very much for being with me today. You've been listening to Optimal Life. Bye for now. Look forward to your company again soon.